Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and today we will be dealing with how do we stop the murder of our children. Now, I thought it very, very interesting and very important that I bring this to the forefront today. I've been contacted by brothers and sisters all over the country, and I've always, for the past few days, been asked the same questions. How do you think this Trayvon thing going? What do you think? What's your opinion on this thing and this, that, and the other? But I think Trayvon Martin is dead, and what I think that we, the remainder of us who are living, should be concentrating on the solution to the problem. And so we're going to make an attempt to deal with the solution of the problem this evening. How do you stop America from killing people of African descent? What type of training should we have? How strong should our unity be? Should we kill the people who kill our children? If so, what kind of weapons should we use? Should we form national military units? How valuable should we regard the lives of our children? What have people of African descent done about war in the past? This is what we're going to deal with this evening. First of all, let me say, for those of you who are new and are listening to this broadcast for the very first time, we give away articles, and this evening is no exception. We are offering the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play. We are offering Secrets of America, the U.S. Bankruptcy and the Moors, and the 14th Amendment Exposed. Okay? In order to get that, send me an email at tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. And I will send that to you. Okay, we're going to put this in the chat room so you'll be able to get it. Also, I've been contacted by the brothers and sisters for the past 2 months asking me the same question. When you guys are going to get something for dealing with the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS? Well, I'm here to tell you that it is official. We now officially have it. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Okay? That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And you will see the Get Rid of the Internal Revenue Service package. You have to understand, the Internal Revenue Service is a private entity operating illegally for all these years. And people have been trying to figure out how to deal with this thing. But there is a way to deal with them. Once you deal with this situation here, with the stuff that we're providing for you, you will never hear from them again. And that is a guarantee. They will be stupid to do so. And I don't think they're quite that stupid. Anyway, my position is this. This is my position as a man. I personally feel like I have to look at all the facts. When you look at all of the facts, then you can make an intelligent decision. It is a fact that for the duration of time, the people of African descent has been on this landmass, they have been persecuted by particular people. The Arabs participated in the slave trade. The Jews participated in the slave trade. Caucasians participated in the slave trade. Spaniards participated in the slave trade. And there were other people who benefited across the board from the slave trade. Now, we are talking about Africans who were captured and made slaves. Nobody went and captured a slave from nowhere because they didn't have that over there. They was took and made slaves. And they did not acquiesce, meaning they did not just lay down and just let you do this. Then we have people of African descent who participated in aiding the captors of the slave. We have that too. What we're doing now, we're going to lay this whole thing out. We're laying it all, the bitter and the sweet. But now, after the cold-blooded, systematic murder and enslavement of over 200 million people, all of a sudden now, we want to put up systems to try to figure out how to deal with this and how to, maybe there's a way that we can work this out. But what I'm noticing is if you want to get to a solution and you want to stop a thing and really, really remedy a situation, you need to get to the root cause of the problem. You cannot talk about anything involving criminality, social behavior, criminal behavior, any of that without talking about the original murders and put the entire thing in context. When you do it that way, now we can begin to look at the system from an entirely different perspective. Now, it is at that point when if you are a descendant of the people who participated in the murders, you have to be careful about allowing the word God to roll off of your lips in a situation like this. Now, we have the situation where Zimmerman has been found not guilty. Now, me personally, I'm not surprised because I have seen this over and over and over again. But we have a lot of young people today who have no knowledge of their past, no knowledge of the past of what is taking place inside the United States. They upset. You have one brother, he's talking about rioting. And then we need to riot and we, you know, all the way here. He has forgotten that all dogs don't bark. We're going to get down into that tonight and tell you what I mean by that. But the first thing I want to talk to you about is sharks in the ocean. The United States of America delivered an atomic bomb to the island of Tinian on a ship called the USS Indianapolis. That ship was hit by a torpedo and went down in the ocean after they delivered the bomb and the sailors was on the way back. If I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves me right, I think 200 men went in the water. It went down in history as the biggest shark attack in recorded history. The sharks never asked who they were. Only thing they knew, and all they knew, was that we got lunch in the water. Many books have been written on that attack and what happened. Some of the people who were still alive and eventually saved, which is just a small handful, they told the story of looking at their buddy that they thought was alive, but when they swim over there to him and touch him, he had been cut half in two. But the sharks never asked who he was. You were in their waters. You were lunch. Some of the men reported splashing and screaming and hollering, and they said, well, sometimes the shark would go away. But then again, sometimes he wouldn't go away. And we bite the men, and his eyes roll back in his head. He don't even look real. In the water, it looks like he got doll eyes. It doesn't look real. But when he bites you, then you know he's real. There was no announcement made by the sharks. You were in the water, lunch. Now, when it comes to occurrences inside the United States about the attack, shootings, murder, incarceration of children of African descent inside the United States, we have many different reactions. We have had this sort of thing go on all over the country. Police unlawfully, I won't even use the term lawfully, just murder a young man in cold blood. The brothers and sisters go to rioting, go through their neighborhood, tear up the stores, and tear down this and tear down all this right here. The sharks didn't do that. They only tore up one thing. Do you know what? That was right in front of them. And waste all that energy. Now, I want to talk to you tonight, and we're going to get to that. But I'm going to talk to you tonight about hunting, fishing, trapping, and shooting, and skill, and training. When a man goes to a gun range and he practices a high-powered rifle with a scope on it, or without a scope, which is best at a range, he fires that rifle and he hits the target bullseye. When they bring the target back in there, the man that got the target and say, you got a bullseye. You tell him to put it back out there, let me see if I can hit it again. And you fire again. He brings the target back, and he tell you, you missed the target altogether. No, I couldn't have missed it altogether. I hit a bullseye the first time. I know I hit it. He said, no, you didn't hit it. Put it back out there. You put it back out there, you fire again. Using the same style, same breathing techniques, same professionalism. But he brings it back and say, you missed the whole target again. Put it back out there. Put it back out there, you fire again. And come to find out, you was hitting the target all the time. But the bullet was going straight through the first hole that you fired into the first time because you are a professional and you are accurate. You did not miss the target. Training and skill is very, very important. You got to learn how to fish. You got to learn how to trap. You got to learn how to hunt. You got to learn how to read footprints on the ground. You got to check the temperature in the air. You got to look at the branches on the trees and find out which way it went. Survival is very, very important. And when you got these skills, that totally abolishes fear. You have no room for fear. Because when you are tampered with, we have a problem in America. Now, I'm going to get on with some of the underlying causes and problems that is causing the killings and the reaction to the killings in the country. Because I'm a firm believer, and just like I told you at the outset, all dogs don't bark. All dogs don't bark. Not all of them. Some of them don't bark. But by the time somebody get to the situation or get to the incident, the person has been ripped to pieces. There was no barking.
I appreciate your invitation, and it's a pleasure indeed to share the platform with such distinguished guests and to appear before you, this audience. It's been quite some time, and it's good to be back. Of course, there are times that I sort of have to take a break from the situation to sit and renew my thoughts and to sort of try to put on the written records some of the rationales that we may need to pursue our advancement as a people. I am currently involved in writing on the subject matter of the education of the black child, a rationale for an African-centered education. So if you don't see me too often, it's not because I've given up at all. It's because I'm just dedicating myself to this movement in a way that I think is in line with my talents. So I'm still with you. Now, the evening, of course, is passing very rapidly, so I will not consume a great deal of your time, and I will just sort of run through the outline of the text of my speech that I had prepared here today, dealing with the black adolescents and black-on-black violence. And, of course, I congratulate Brother Lambe for the title here, How White Society Promotes Violence Within the African Community. I often, in talking to students, try to get our students to understand the political game behind courses in the universities and in our schools that appear to be superficially non-political. And I try to get them to understand that everything is political, that there even is a politics of science, so that we can talk about a black physics and black chemistry, black mathematics, and black engineering and the whole bit, because all of these things occur within a political, social context to achieve political and social ends. And when you are taught those courses, whether it's engineering or mathematics or what have you, without those courses being connected to a political context, then you are being politicized, and you're being politicized in a way to support the dominant system, and in this instance, to support white domination. So it becomes very important that whatever we talk about it in context. Because the major ruse that is used in the academies is to decontextualize subject matter. That is, to take subject matter out of context. and to project it as race neutral and objective. So, as a matter of fact, when you read your newspapers, you will see the same kind of game going on. You will get discussions of black-on-black violence, the homicide among our young men, and you will get half explanations or half-truths, such as these young men are killing each other because of the availability of guns. You know, somehow it's just the mere availability of guns that's causing black-on-black homicide, or just the selling of drugs, or other half explanations. We have to watch out for that, because often the other half is the most important one, the one that is left out. How are the guns distributed? Who manufactures them? Who sells them? And the whole bit. Who imports the drugs? Who distributes the drugs? Or it's the cause of poverty. Crime is caused by poverty, caused by poor family background. We get a whole plethora of these kind of half-truth definitions. These guns are made available within a social political context. Drugs are made available within a social political context. Families are broken apart within a social political context. Poverty is created within a social political context. Poor education is the result of a social political context, ladies and gentlemen. And we must constantly then look at that context and see how it creates the conditions of which we complain so much. We must then recognize, as we begin to look at black upon black violence, we must see that violence and its connections to a racist society. And we must come to understand what a racist society is about. We use that term so often without analyzing it very well. And we must recognize essentially then that a racist society is about structuring social and political, economic circumstances, psychological and cultural circumstances, such that one race can take advantage of another, and one race can enhance itself at the expense of another. It has little to do with overt race hatred, or with negative racial attitudes, or with the projection of racial stereotypes, or as Brother Harris says, with whites not understanding the nature of their racism. That's not it. And when you define it in terms of attitude, you'll find yourself then solving the wrong problems. These people will stop expressing those negative attitudes, you see. They will smile more regularly at you. They will even marry you and go to bed with you, sleep with you. But you will note that the effects of racism, the effects of poverty and all of these other things will continue. But not only do they continue, they increase. Ultimately, you must recognize that racism involves the power of one race to impose its will upon another. That ultimately then it is about power. And we have to face that fact. Whites engage in racism because they have the power to do so. And if we are to end white racism, then we must end white power. We use the word imperialistic society and imperialism often, also without looking at it very deeply and looking at the term very deeply. Imperialism, of empire. Speaking then of a group of people who through various means have acquired and maintained an empire, who maintain and exploit control over populations much larger than themselves. We heard a reference here tonight about this population being 5% the white population here of the world, and about the total European population being about 10%, yet in control of 80% of the world's economic resources and in control of the other 90% of the world's populations. You're talking about empire then, ladies and gentlemen. And what does that imply? That means then you have a small population that is ruling over populations that are much, much, much larger than it is. And of course, we don't have time to talk about the psychology of this, but I've often indicated that this can only be possible when that small population maintains the larger populations in a state of false consciousness and in a state of deception. That this small population can only maintain control over those larger populations by outright lying and the falsification of reality. But recognize, in essence then, in terms of the problems we are talking about here this evening, the Colin Powells, the black soldiers in the armies, you have to recognize that the essential nature of imperialism is that, due to the fact that the imperialist group or nation that runs the empire is so small compared to the empire, it must of necessity recruit from the very population it rules in order to control that empire. When you study the history of imperialism, particularly the history of imperialism as regards African people, which has been going on now for over 2,000 years. When you look at the history of imperialism and colonialism on the African continent, and you study Chancellor Williams' books, and you look at the history of imperialism in Africa, you cannot help but recognize that non-European imperialism and European imperialism has been aided by Africans who were recruited into the armies of the imperialistic masters and were used to practice black upon black violence against their African brothers in the name of their European masters. So then when I talk about black upon black violence in this book, we talk about the young men and women in the U.S. Army today, recognize then that we are talking about nothing new, but something that is continuous with the very essence and nature of imperialism and racism. Recognize also that when we talk about black-on-black violence, we are talking about a violence that violence produced. That black-upon-black violence is reflective of white on black violence. And that ultimately it reflects the violence that this Eurocentric and European community has practiced upon black people and our reactions to that violence. When we then talk about a racist society, an imperialistic society, recognize then that we are talking about a crimogenic society. What do we mean by crimogenic society? Of course, racism is a crime against humanity and a crime against our race. Imperialism is a crime against our race as well. And therefore, when you have a racist society and an imperialistic society, you have a crimogenic society. What do we mean then by a crimogenic society? Of course, dealing with the word genesis, we are talking about the idea of generating the beginning, as in the word genesis, to begin, the source of, the point of creation of. So when we talk about this society as a crimogenic society, we are talking about this society then as the source of crimes. as the generator of criminality, as the creator of criminals, a society that is run by criminals, and a society then that ultimately criminalizes its population and criminalizes the total system. I had a piece here, you know, there's some of you here who are middle class and you think you're nice. You think you're non-criminal. A criminal society criminalizes all of its constituents. I don't have time tonight to read to you the justification for that piece. Oh, there's some of you who've been in the church and you think you're good. Read in Black on Black Violence where I talk about your dumb goodness. A goodness that maintains sin and criminality. We don't have time to talk about it tonight. You're in the church, but you're guilty too. Because you see, ladies and gentlemen, when the leadership of a nation lies to that nation, when it deceives that nation, when it miseducates that nation and falsifies facts, it falsifies the consciousness of the people who inhabit that nation. And when it falsifies their consciousness, it recruits those of its people into its criminality. So whether you know it or don't know it, you're a part of the game. Oh, yes, we have to confront our responsibility for this criminal situation as well. Yes, we do. Whether you're looking at us as so-called middle class, remember those of you who are making it in this society, who are making great profits, great accomplishments, sitting at the same tables with your white masters. That you're sitting and profiting from the death and murder and destruction of your ancestors. That as you eat with your white masters, you are eating the flesh and spirits of your people. You can cover it up and lie to yourself and claim it's your individual striving that got you where you're going. That you are taking advantage of opportunities. But remember, these opportunities were based on the death and destruction of African people and the continuing death and destruction of African people. Those of you rolling around in the church and carrying on in the same position as well. But let me continue. This society is a society of criminals, run by criminals, and it is a creator of criminals. And we must recognize it. And I have to say that because we got some people out here who say, I want my children to be just like them. That's the ultimate goal. I don't want there to be any differences. What are you talking about? You want them to be enslavers, rapists, and robbers, and killers, and murderers, and imperialists, and so forth, just like the other folk, right? Think again, ladies and gentlemen. But due to our time, I'm just going to have to rush through here. I accuse the society of being a criminogenic society, a criminal society. A society that engages in white on black violence for a number of reasons. And of course, as you can tell often the psychology of an individual or people in terms of their origins and early childhood experiences, you can look at then the psychology of a people in terms of their origins and early childhood of their race. And when we look then at the origins of this society, we must immediately recognize that it is a society founded on criminal activities. Yes, and that is this inheritance today. It is still a part of it. A society that is a crimogenic society, and a society that engages on white, on black violence, because it is founded on the murder and theft of Indian peoples and Indian lands. It is a crimogenic society, a criminal society, and a society that practices white on black violence, because it is a society founded on the kidnapping of African people, the manslaughter of African people in the mid-passage, the extortion from African people of their labor, and the enslavement of African people. Therefore, the very nature and foundations of this society rest on two massive genocidal crimes, and this original crime is a part of its nature today. It is a criminogenic society, a criminal society, a society that practices white on black their lands. Because this group of people cannot face their own criminality, they must engage in the psychology of denial and repression and distortion. And this denial and distortion and repression must suffuse throughout the total society, throughout its total institutions, throughout its total values, and therefore ultimately it must pervert its total population. It is a criminal society and a white on black violent society because it engages in the crime of breach of contract. It has breached the contract of its constitution. It breached the contracts it made with African people during the Reconstructions. It breached its contracts of the 14th, 15th, and other amendments. It breached its contracts in reversing its rulings in the 1860s, 1870s, 1980s, and 1990s. It breached its contracts in terms of sharecropping, the peonage of our people, going back on the 40 acres and a mule, and all the rest of the things. It is a criminal society because it constantly engages in assault and battery against its black populations. It engaged in historical lynching, and behind the walls, as my brother mentioned here, of prisons, it still now engages in legal lynchings of African people. It engages in Klan terrorism, which it is still engaged in today. It engages in race riots, where it destroys the African people. It engages in police riots, and it engages in police brutality, where over 300 or more of our young men and women have been destroyed in the city of New York alone. It is a criminal society, and it is a crimogenic society, and a society that engages in white on black violence, because it is indicted on the charges of official malfeasance when it revokes its mandate in terms of giving justice to its people and makes this justice system an instrument of injustice, when its so-called rehabilitative system is a school for criminality. It engages in official malfeasance when it rigs its juries, when it legally lynches the ones it so woefully sentences. It engages in official malfeasance when it engages in gerrymandering of black districts, when it betrays the mandates of black voters, when it builds, as my brother mentioned here, prisons as industries so that the incarceration of black men becomes a profit-making industry and a means by which the ruling class makes war against the subordinate classes. It engages in criminal activity, and it is a criminal society when it engages in unfair labor practices, job discrimination, when at the end of the Reconstruction there were more black skilled workers than there were whites, and the whites unionized to keep the blacks from taking advantage of the opportunities that were available to them. It is indicted for labor racketeering when it runs black men away from its construction sites, when we go into a black community where housing is supposedly being made and built for black residents, and we see few, if any, black men building those houses. And when those black men come to work on those sites, they are chased away by the police and the construction workers. And when they are chased away and made to stand on the corners, then they are accused of refusing to work and desiring not to work. We accuse this society of being a crimogenic society, of being a criminal organization, of being an organization that engages in chronic white-on-black violence, when it engages in drug trafficking, when it imports the drugs that poisons our neighborhoods and destroys the consciousness of our people, destroys their health. We see a crimogenic people from way back engaging in the selling of opium to the Chinese and in engaging in opium wars. We see this drug trafficking group of people engaging in alcohol addiction when they used it to destroy Indians, when they used it to destroy African chiefs who, under the influence of the alcohol, often signed away their peoples and their nations. We accuse it of drug addiction and drug trafficking when it traded guns for drugs to carry on its warfare in Central and South America. We accuse it of being a criminal nation, a criminal people, a criminal nation, a crimogenic society, when it engages in gun running across the world, when it sells the very weapons that will be used to destroy its own sons and daughters. We accuse it of criminality when it acts to maintain an evil military-industrial complex. We accuse it of being a criminal society when it sells its death wares across the world. How many of us recognize that we are dealing here with merchants of death? That these people are dead and deadly. People who are robbing black people at home so that they can rob black people abroad. We accuse this nation of being a crimogenic society and the ruling white population of being a criminal people, because they engage in economic extortion, taxation of black people without representation, the redlining of black communities as they steal the savings and investment of black people, as they disinvest in the black community, as they do not return loans to the black community and use the monies that the black communities and the black church place in their coffers to export jobs out of the community into suburbs beyond the black, to the reach of the black population, when they export jobs outside of the country totally and starve our black men and women in Detroit and the other urban centers of this world. We accuse them of economic extortion when they deindustrialize this nation and ship out the blue-collar jobs that maintain the families of black people across this country and ship them to other places and exploit the other populations of this world. We accuse them of imperial criminality and of organized crime. This nation is an organized mafia operation. I have indicated to you that it is best when you look at the international situation that you will come away with a better understanding if you apply the concepts of mafia psychology to the international relations that are going on right now and that have been going on. We don't have time to talk about a chapter I do in here that I call quantifying the myth. You know, the myth of making black people appear to be more criminal than white people. A myth that is statistically supported by the number of black men and women arrested, by the number of black men and women incarcerated, by the number of black men and women under probation and parole. And of course, now we are supposed to look at those statistics and compare them between black and white. And because we see more blacks arrested, more blacks in jail, more blacks in probation and parole, we are supposed to make the illogical assumption that blacks are more criminal than whites. I told you time and time again, ladies and gentlemen, that in a society that's based on lies, as this one is, in a society that can only exist based on deception, that truth is reversed. That's in essence what a lie is. And therefore, when you look at the so-called statistics that seek to establish the criminality of black people, turn it around and turn them around, and you will recognize that the criminals are outside the prisons. We don't have time to talk about it tonight, but that's the value of having power, you see. You can make criminal whatever you want to make it. You can legitimize your own criminality and perverseness. You can call virtue a crime and arrest people for being virtuous. And then you can look at the statistics and say, aren't they more criminal because they are in jail? Some of you read a recent situation here in the Hasidic community where a bunch of Jews ran out, broke arms, and hurt the police, what, about 2 or 3 dozen policemen. This, of course, comes after a time when they broke into a police precinct station and ransacked it. How many of those people went to jail? How many got fingerprinted? How many of them are in prison? And so forth. And yet, can we say that they did not commit a crime? You see, what do we have here then? A situation, you see, where if you use crime statistics, you're not going to find those Hasidic Jews in the statistics. You're not going to find them on the prison rolls. You see, that's what power does for you, isn't it? It permits you to commit a crime and keep yourself out of jail. And then you can go into the jailhouse and look at the statistics and compare the number of blacks arrested on probation, on parole, and compare them with Hasidic Jews. And say, well, I see one is very big and the other one is very little. Therefore, the blacks must be more criminal than the Hasidic Jews. You can never be more wrong in your life. You have to understand. But we have to get away from that. You know, this is the kind of teaching that goes on in the university today. Understand that when white boys and white girls are not on the rolls, the prison rolls, and in the prison populations, it points to the efficiency of their criminal organization. How do we say that? A mafia don who has a very efficient criminal operation, who can create a murder incorporated, who can engage in drug trafficking and killing and murdering and extortion, the same kind of games I've been reading to you here tonight, can earn so much money until he can keep his children innocent. Keep them out of jail. give them good educations, and the whole bit. You understand what I'm getting at? In other words, those children's names do not appear on the crime blotters. They are not in the jails because their fathers are such good mafia operators. So even their innocence speaks to the efficient criminality of their fathers. And because then the white boys are not in jail with the black boys, do not make the assumption that means the white boys are less criminal or their fathers are less criminal. It means they just have a criminally efficient operation. We got to move on here. This country then is an imperialist criminal operation because it robs the people at home, and you see it as it robs the people abroad. It constricts the black males to fight its criminal wars. It maintains worldwide terror and extortion. It, of course, maintains the criminality in Namibia, South Africa, Angola, Panama, Grenada, Central South America, Zaire, and the whole bit. I accuse this nation of being a criminal nation because it engages in the health neglect of our people. This nation, as determined by its own task force, indicates that black and minority health, in the area of black and minority health, there are 60,000 more minority deaths per year based on an expectation of equal death rates for blacks and whites. As a matter of fact, melanin gives you an added lifespan. So what are we saying here? That this society, due to its neglect of the health of black people, excesses the lives of some 60,000 black people a year. This is murder. It engages in child neglect and child abuse as it maintains the infant mortality rate of black children to more than twice that of white children, as it maintains a measles rate 16 times that of white children, as it maintains the poverty of our black children, increasing the poverty of black children at the rate of some 750,000 children a year. It engages in educational neglect, as it engages in the miseducation of our children, as it refuses to fund the Head Start and early childhood education programs, as it refuses to fund the education programs under Chapter 1. And I wish I had the time to read the statistics here of how our children are killed and our families are destroyed through educational neglect. This criminal society then sets up the psychology of black-on-black violence by creating a sense of powerlessness in our young people, by projecting negative stereotypes upon their mentality such that they seek to escape an African identity and alienate themselves from their African selves and internalize the values and perceptions projected by the dominant society, as their appetites are distorted so that they literally then eat themselves to death or desire things which will destroy them, as it frustrates them such that in their anger they turn against themselves, as it makes them displace their anger against their fellow victims. This society is a criminogenic society because it serves as the best model of criminality. The black-on-black criminal has learned from the best of teachers, the white-on-black criminal. It engages in criminality as it supplies weaponry to our children and alcohol and drugs. How does this relate then to our adolescents? Recognize that almost 50% of the young men who die between 15 and 24 die as a result of homicide, black-on-black homicide. This would be a major health problem if we were another ethnic group. Recognize that the cream of the African race is being destroyed before it has a chance to reach manhood. Homicide is the leading cause of death of black males between 15 and 24. Is it because, ladies and gentlemen, if you look at the demographic situations in this country, we are producing and outproducing white people in terms of children? Must understand that, at a rate of almost 3 or 4 to 1. The Hispanics are outproducing them about 5 or 6 to 1. That means the larger part of the up-and-coming population is going to be black and Latino. And these people have already written about the birth dearth. And so what do we have here then, ladies and gentlemen? The destruction of a race and the destruction of that group that would move us toward being a majority in this country. So this has a lot to do with adolescence. And adolescence, of course, is a major point in the development of an individual's life, because it is during adolescence that the self-concept is being developed, that the individual is undergoing an identity crisis, a gender identity crisis, that the individual is dealing with the issues of self-esteem, dealing with the issues of body image, which is the reason why you see them getting caught up in clothes and other adornments. It is the period of time when an individual looks for social affirmation and social acceptance and looks forward to social belongingness. It is a period of time when the emotions are labile and unstable, and therefore the individual is seeking to bring his emotional, sexual, and other drives under control. It is a period of time when the individual is wrestling with social acceptance, wrestling with alienation from the adult society, the society in general, and alienation from itself. It is the time when the person is engaged in intellectual development. It is a time when the individual is asking and trying to deal with moral questions and make vocational choices. It is a time of egocentrism, a time of status striving and being concerned with clothing and cars and other things. It is a time when the person deals with invidious comparisons. That is, how do I make myself look good by making other people look bad? And therefore, when you look at this social system, it strikes our youngsters at their most vulnerable periods of their lives and seeks to transform them. Now, you may say, some of you who are older, well, you know, we wrestled with the same thing. But keep this in mind, you see, that though these issues are issues that may have been a part of my generation and earlier generations, that these issues are taking place within a different social political context. They're taking place within a different socioeconomic historical context. And it is these contexts that combine to determine whether these issues will develop into positive outcomes, negative outcomes, or conflicting and ambivalent outcomes. So today's black adolescents, particularly the poverty-stricken adolescent, exist in a world that is quite different from the world of his parents. Very different from the world even of the 50s and 60s, because we have a youth now that is engaged in the post-industrial age. When you dropped out of school, there were jobs waiting in some factory or on some shipyard or some other place for you. Those jobs are not there today. And so you have to recognize that these youngsters are dealing with a different world. The computers weren't there when you dropped out at the time and when you miseducated yourself. These are children who are engaged in an information age. These are children who are engaged in a highly urbanized world. These are no longer farm boys and rural people from the rural South caught up in their rural communities. These are kids raised in the ghettos, in the projects, and in the poverty-stricken areas of the urban cities. These are children then that are raised in an information data processing world, a world of television and mass media, a mass media that recognizes that they have money or that they can get money, And now a world that instead of just selling to adults, makes teenagers its major marketing audience, and therefore creates desires and wishes, and plays the cruel hoax on our teenagers by provoking their desires through TV, through singers, through Ray Charles talking about Pepsi, to black religious music, and then does not provide them the means by which they are to get the things by which their appetites have been provoked to desire. Recognize this then, ladies and gentlemen. Recognize that we are dealing at a time of rising expectations. You see, when we grew up, we knew that there were certain slots for us, and we didn't have to worry about the other ones. Now we live in a world of rising expectations. Be the best that you can be. Be all that you can be. We see the result of that. These youngsters are living in a time of family dissolution. Remember, the largest percentage of black children up to the 1950s were raised in a two-headed family. Now we are dealing with children where the vast majority of families are single-headed and in poverty and caught in their situations. So don't be too quick to put yourself in this place and compare yourself in your time to the children in this time. You're dealing with a different time. We're dealing in a time of conservative governments and a conservative world situation. We are dealing in a time of world and national demographic changes. These children are growing up in a time, as we said earlier, where there's an availability of weapons so that they may kill themselves, where the escapist drugs have moved beyond alcohol and twister wine and moved into devastating crack, and a type of drug now that didn't involve hustling 50 Cent to get a bit of Thunderbird, but that now must involve constant hustling, robbery, and even death to get a whiff of crack. A type of drug situation and an escapist drug situation that creates a totally different social structure, a totally different attitudinal structure, such being that the black community is held in terror and families are being destroyed and robbed by their own sons and daughters. Recommendations. We have to go quickly here, but I'm going to get it in. You'll have to catch me at another time. Yet, and we had to, but I've got to mention the recommendations at least, because we have to move beyond analysis. So let me quickly just run through these. Pardon me if I'm going fast here. If this is a climatogenic society, and it is, then we recognize as African people that our major problem is not being left out of the American mainstream and being left out of the system. We must recognize that we cannot join a criminal system because we will become criminals in it. Golden Power represents the apotheosis, the ultimate of what a criminal system is. He represents what it means to move up in a criminal society. In moving into that system and becoming integrated in it and assimilated with it, he must now become allied with this criminality. And if that system then is dependent upon the death and damnation of black people, upon the imperial subordination of black people, then those like Colin Powell that move up in this system must also then engage in the death and damnation of black people as well. We have to keep that in mind. You're not moving up into this system as it is unless you're also moving against the interests of black people. And therefore, you have to recognize that the goal of our people in this climatogenic society is to change the very nature of the social system, to tear it apart and to reconstruct it, to bring into being that word that Bush stole from us, a new world order. Our mission is much higher than assimilating into this system. It must be to create a new world. If this climatogenic society creates a sense of powerlessness in our children, then we must, as a people, develop and use our power. We must take power and train our youth for taking and expressing power positively. If this system destroys the attitudes of our people through projection and projecting on them criminality, we must inoculate our children against evil white projections by inoculating them with truth and the truth of themselves, inoculating them with self-knowledge. We must inoculate them against projection and the internalization of negative attitudes by getting them into the knowledge and the psychology and the ways of their white enemies, and getting them to have an efficient perception of reality and remove their deceptions. If they are alienated from themselves and are infused by an evil white spirit who is implanted in their minds and bodies to serve the will of his devilish masters, then we must reclaim our African-centered identity, and we must reclaim an African-centered consciousness, and we must learn to love ourselves and love each other and engage in cooperation and communalism. This is how we prevent alienation. If the society twists our desires and makes us desire the things that destroy us and hate the things that advance our interests, we must learn a new set of values, inculcate deep and abiding cultural goals, learn to discern when one is being manipulated and exploited. Our children must learn the mechanisms of advertising, mass hypnosis, subliminal suggestion, conditioning, and lies.
Okay, Morris, we're back. It is at this point that if any of you have a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will recognize that. Just follow the prompts on your phone. The number to dial is 310-982-4184. And we will recognize your hand, and that way you can let us know what you think, okay?
The David Pakman Show at davidpakman.com.
Welcome to the show. Hi to everyone who's watching us live on YouTube every Monday through Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, including everybody from the We Survive Bush, You'll Survive Obama Facebook page, and the I Love It When I Wake Up in the Morning and Barack Obama is President Facebook page. Check those out. We may have found the next George Zimmerman. This is another case out of Florida, specifically in Jacksonville, Florida. This is another case of a white guy shooting an unarmed black kid. The white man's name is Michael David Dunn. The African-American kid was 17-year-old Jordan Davis. Now, Natan, I think we should be able to find that side-by-side of Dunn and the victim, Jordan Davis, which I had pointed out to you where to find that. Michael David Dunn was in Jacksonville a few days ago for his son's wedding. And afterwards, he decided to stop at a convenience store with his girlfriend. His girlfriend went into the store, and she was in there buying, apparently, a bottle of wine. And there was a vehicle, there was an SUV with four unarmed teenagers nearby. And Dunn made a comment to the teenagers that the music was too loud. In other words, he was upset that the music was loud. He decided to tell the kids the music is too loud. An argument followed, and then Dunn, who is a gun collector, pulled out his gun and fired at the SUV reportedly 8 to 9 times. Now, two of those shots hit Jordan Davis and killed him, okay? After the fact, Lieutenant Rob Schoonover, who is from Jacksonville Homicide, said, quote, "Our victim was shot a couple of times. They were listening to the music. It was loud. They admitted that. But, I mean, that is not a reason for someone to open fire on them, I'll say." When the girlfriend came back to the car, Dunn drove off and he admitted to her that he, quote, "fired at these kids." Later, they heard a news report that someone had died in the shooting. They went back to their home in Brevard County, Florida. Witnesses of the shooting had written down the license plate number. Long story short, Dunn is arrested. Now, after his arrest, Dunn told Jacksonville detectives that he, quote, "felt threatened, and that is the reason that he took action." He's being held without bail. He is going to be transported to a jail in Jacksonville to face charges of murder and attempted murder. Now, he already pled not guilty in court. What's the argument, Lewis?
What's the argument? That he was somehow acting in self-defense?
Absolutely. His attorney, who is Robin Lemonides, said, it will be very clear that Mr. Dunn acted very responsibly and as any responsible firearms owner would have acted under these circumstances. Now, I don't know about that. I know a lot of firearms owners, and they're near vehicles with loud music all the time, and they never end up killing anybody.
Right. I think if I had to guess, I would say that this is a man with a violent history, a man who is incredibly racist, and a man who just wanted to kill somebody.
We don't yet know any of that information, but speculation from producer Louis Motamedi. Now, Jacksonville attorney Gene Nichols said that most likely we're looking at a George Zimmerman-style stand-your-ground defense attempt, but that it's going to be a tough case to make. In other words, the question is, why didn't you call the sheriff's office? If you were reasonably protecting yourself, why did you leave the scene? Why did you get in your car and the next day flee the jurisdiction of that county? There's no indication at all that anyone in the vehicle had a gun. There's no indication at all that any threat was posed. This time it was loud music. Last time it was Skittles and iced tea. Ladies and gentlemen, Florida once again, the trials and tribulations of stand your ground laws once again, which recently were actually, there was some kind of a hearing about whether stand your ground laws need to be revisited, and the determination was, no, those laws are fine. We'll see if they're fine. We'll see if there's a, if there's an attempt made here.
Now, I know how you feel about stand your ground laws, and I'm not convinced that they're a bad thing. But let's hope that the courts actually work.
Right.
And that
it's clear that this isn't a stand your ground case.
Right.
Absolutely.
Area code 606.
Yes,
606.
I'm 32. Yes, I'm 32. I am a member of the Marsh Science Temple of America. I am a native of the land, and I would like to say that the terms that we're using are incorrect. The law applies in every piece of land attached to the District of Columbia. Statutes do not. So the state of Florida statutes are allowing and promoting for this type of this type of evil. But this type of evil is not the first time we've seen this type of evil. No, for it to raise the eyebrow is really, really, really surprising to me. This happens in every state, everywhere. Only certain ones get to actually be covered by the news. I remember being 12 myself with three officers with guns to my head, walking down the street in Lexington, Kentucky. It's still like that here. And it is. And the thing is, the people, what we don't realize is that we're being so distracted with all of this unnecessary, and it's real. It's death, but it's unnecessary when the underlying fact of the matter is that this place is falling. It's falling. And the wealthy people that are here are planning on leaving. They're planning on leaving all of us with our racism, with our, all these non-existing things. I feel the whole racism thing was just something that was created to keep us distracted from the underlying fact that we're all bonded by a birth certificate given to the governor, then loans are created on us. This is the underlying. This is what's being covered up. It's not nothing really what we're talking about. It's all cover up to keep our minds occupied with foolishness when the fact of the matter is that there are loans taken out, the same number on the back of your Social Security card, the same number printed on so many millions of dollars that we call dollar bills, the fact that we work for the right to borrow, that we never even see the money, that we've never paid anything. These are the things automatically putting us under the statute and the jurisdiction of each state by carrying that ID. It's a contract construct. It is a contract construct with a signature and an all-caps corporation on it. And these are law terms. These are not I want to think terms. These are not high school, college terms. These are Black's Law Dictionary terms. And when we're using them in the media, we're not thinking in a lawful manner with these words. You see what I'm saying? So anybody at any time can be killed because the state, church, and all, they're all one. They're all one. And the thing about it is that if we as the people continue to be blind and allow some of the elected officials who we have voted into to have an office, you must be voted, otherwise you're not an officer. So cops, constables on patrols are not indeed by law officers. They're corporations. They're agents. They work for agencies such as central agencies or the north side agency or the south side agency. And the cops, they're silent. These people are all part of societies. These people are all part of ranking systems that are beyond our imagination. And the people, if us, Black, white, green, yellow, whatever, we're not even identified by color, but if we as people, as human and humankind, man and mankind, if we come together and stand, what can stop us? But everyone is so occupied in their self-righteousness and their self-knowledge and their self-leadership and their own hope that they're not willing to step out into the communities and join hands together. And that's all I have to say. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, let me ask you. First of all, I don't want you to tell me your name, but what I do want you to tell me, I want you to answer this question for me. Do you have children?
Yes, sir.
How old are they?
One is 10, one is 8, and one is 5.
All right, let's take the 10-year-old.
Uh-huh.
What do you suggest I do? Not you, but me.
Mm-hmm.
If a policeman shoot my 10-year-old, you kill him. Not you, but me.
First, I would suggest that you don't listen to me if you're not ready to hear what I'm going to say. I would advise you to call some brothers and go kill him.
Okay, fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if there's anybody else got any more questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. We're going to open up lines because the lines are open now. And our brother, I appreciate you for calling in and dropping that science on us. If anybody else got another question or comment, go ahead and call in because now's the time. And let me add that for those of you who are new just calling in, I'm giving away my free articles. Send me an email. Just say, Tahaka, send me the free articles you mentioned on your broadcast last night to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. Now, brothers and sisters have been calling me all over the United States asking me about this thing for the internal revenue. How are we going to get the Internal Revenue Service off of us? And I'm here to tell you now it's officially
ready. Official, Moores. The brothers and sisters have been contacting me all over the United States asking me, when are you guys going to get something to help us deal with the Internal Revenue Service? I'm here to tell you, officially, we do. Go to http://www.newfreehelpgroup.com. You see, to get rid of the Internal Revenue Service package right there waiting on you. Okay, now this is the breakdown of this thing. What we got to understand is the Internal Revenue Service is a private corporation not connected to the United States government as a country, and is operating illegally. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com, and if you're interested in doing that, go ahead and contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get rid of the Internal Revenue Service packages, now officially available.
Hi, this is Sharon Hunter Bay in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hey, Sharon. What's on your mind, sis?
All right. I just wanted to chime in on this verdict that came in yesterday with John Zimmerman being found not guilty. And I'm glad to see that nobody took their usual route of going out and destroying their own neighborhoods and things of that nature, because that didn't accomplish anything. So I'm glad they didn't jump to that stage. But I wasn't surprised by the verdict. I expected it all along. because they never wanted to press charges against the man to begin with. If it hadn't been for people protesting or getting into it, they never would have pressed any charges against him anyway. So I believe that the whole thing was just staged to try to throw us a bone, to try to calm us down. We're going to go ahead and put him on trial like this for murder, and knew all the time that he was going to be released. So I just feel sad about the whole thing, though, and I have two teenage black young males, and I know that if it had a situation had happened to one of my boys, don't worry, I won't be seeking no kind of justice in the courtroom, because it ain't never no justice there for us, and I don't know how long it's going to take or what it's going to take for us to realize that that is no justice for us there. So I have to seek my own form of justice.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, and I'm going to put the same question to you that I put to the gentleman that called in earlier. If I had a teenage son, 18 years old, and he was gunned down in the streets, what do you think, in your opinion, as a woman looking at me, that I am a brother, should do about it?
I happen to agree with the gentleman and what he said before, because I know it sounds harsh. I posted a comment similar to that online on the Facebook social media, and everybody come back on me telling me that I was just as bad as him. If I had those type of thoughts about trying to do that, that didn't make me no better than him, and all of that kind of stuff. And so, but I have the same opinion. It seems to me that that's the only thing that people understand. It seems like this stuff been going on to us for years. It ain't just started happening. It's just been a never-ending circle of how they're actually trying to wipe out black males out of this country. And the only thing that they understand seems to be, to me, is violence. It's something that's connected with their history throughout anywhere they've been in the world. They've brought violence there. So it's something that they understand. So they don't care how many times they do it, and all you're going to do is go march up and down the street, hold some signs, sing some songs. They don't care about that. That doesn't affect them. What they do understand is that gun, and they understand that violence part. So we have to hit them on the lines of what they can understand, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's say that a Caucasian policeman shot my son down in the streets because he say he thought that he had a gun. You don't think that I should go join the church and pray about it? Well, let me rephrase that question. Let's say that, because you just told me that you're looking for some justice, and you're looking for some thunder and lightning. You just told me that. But now, if I was your husband, and they shot your son down in the streets, and I told you that I think that we need to go to the church, we need to pray about it, we need to call on Jesus, and everything going to be all right, what would you think?
I don't think you would be no husband of mine thinking like that, because we have to be on the church thought pattern, and I know that I wouldn't be having them kind of thoughts. And no man of mine will be having them problems either. He's going to be on my page, and we're going to be on each other's page. We're going to do what needs to be done.
Oh. Okay. So I'm not finna call the church right now. I'm only... I certainly appreciate you calling in to straighten this up, is that right?
All right.
Okay. All right, dawg. Okay, Nat, if you got any questions in the comments, ladies and gentlemen, go ahead and raise your hand. Okay, we got 757. 757.
Peace, Hotel. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing just fine, Susan. Come on in here.
Yeah, you know who this is, Elder. This is Queen, Elder Queen Yeshiva.
All right, let me have it. How you doing?
Yep, I'm doing all right. What I don't understand is that the stuff that went on in Florida, they're talking about boycotting Florida, but you got to boycott every state because most of all our food products and our fruits and vegetables and most of all that stuff come from Florida. So it's in every state, Virginia, D.C., New York, everywhere. You got to boycott all their business in every state, not just Florida. You got to boycott all around.
Okay. So now, what you're saying is that boycotting is not the answer.
Boycott is the answer, but you got to boycott more than Florida. Because if they boycott in Florida, Florida products gonna still be going in the other states, and our people gonna still be supporting them other states.
All right. Well, let me ask you this: what do you think should be done about Zimmerman? He's been found not guilty. He's going to be released. He's gonna go home to his family. What you saying about that?
All I know is a gun that's waiting for a bullet to shoot out of. That's all I'm going to tell you. That's all I see.
All right. Oh,
I see.
Oh, okay.
That's what I see.
Okay. Do you have another question or comment?
That's what my comment is. It's a gun that a bullet was waiting to be shoot out of. Because if he going free. But he ain't going to live free because he's going to be all the time what? Watching his back, wondering who's out
okay.
there, wondering who's going to hurt him. He's not going to live as a free man totally. He's going to be a totally wreck and a totally crazy person because somebody's going to get him, and he knows that somebody's going to get him.
Okay. All right, Susan. Well, I certainly appreciate you calling in, and we thank you so much for your comments, okay?
All right. Thank you for listening.
All right, sister. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the floor wide open. Come on in here. Let's get it out. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. Area code 606.
This is Noble Moshe Ismael. I spoke with you once before. I agree with her completely. Every state would have to boycott. This is what brings us together. That's an absolute wonderful idea. If the men, because what I've been hearing is a lot of women, if the men would stand up, if the men back then would have continued to have stood up and not been afraid of the guns, if the men back then, and that fear passed through our generation, and that fear is what they're using, and they're going to continue to use. In all states, that fear, well, I'm part of a generation that is here to take over a remnant that's been promised to be destroyed. And that remnant is that older generation of men who were afraid. We are not afraid. I have 3,900, and that's not a big number. But they're all willing to go to Florida and stand outside that courthouse. And the thing about the citizens of us, we as a nation and him being part of our nationality, whether it's recognized or not, his blood proves it. So the word game can go out the window. I'm saying he's still one of ours, and his mother is still one of ours. And guess what? We take care of ours. That's how all these gangs, I was affiliated in Crips. My brother's affiliated in Bloods. All these gangs coming down from Chicago to St. Louis, all the way to New York. We're in Kentucky now. We're in Florida, Atlanta. We're some 85,000 strong, ready to go rob, kill, and steal and destroy. Well, you know what we've done? We've changed it. We've kicked out the older OGs that's about the foolishness. Now it's about our nation building. Now it's about brotherhood. Now it's about all these things. And now it's time to put down those gang names and pick up the name National and pick up the name Father and pick up the name Family. You know what saying these are the things that my generation are working on. And guess what? We are going to shoot back at any police, as we already have. And we're going to shoot back at any military because, for one, this is our land. And, you know, it was promised to us that if the Asiatics in this land would come together, we have so many armies around the world that would help us. That's fact, brother Tarkin. I love you. I love you so much for everything that you do on Facebook. I love you so much. I've heard so much about your travels all through the land, being effective. You see what I'm saying? This conference call is something that's effective. And I just turned 32, you know, and I've been studying my butt off, you know, to be able to stand in court for people that are less fortunate to actually obtain the information. I've obtained the information. It's been given divinely by the Most High, and I feel in our generation we're not going to stop. If the United States thinks that we, the younger generation, are not going to do something, they have gravely mistaken. And it's one word, and all the states are going chaos right now. One word. And you know, the Grand Sheik, I love him. I love to hear him speak. He's one of my favorite people, and he's always on the truth. He's always. But the rest of the people who are claiming to be sheiks, that's claiming to be officers in little subsections of Science Temple with these papers flying around, don't know how to send them. Don't. I don't need no paper. I got them. I don't need them, though. And a cop would never dare step to me here. They have. They would never dare step to me. I break them all the way down. They touch me, it's going to be on. I don't have no bills in my name. I don't have no leases in my name. I'm not part of no corporation. I'm sovereign. I do my own electric. I do my own water. I do all of that on my own. I don't use nothing that they have so that they can try to say I'm under their jurisdiction and give me any rules and all this type of stuff. But the more that we start spreading this to the ones that are soldiers, not the passive Moors, the ones that are aggressive, the ones that want to stand, the ones that don't have nothing to do, so they go join the U.S. Army. Those ones that actually have a heart, those are the ones that we're aiming towards. I'm telling you, get ready for the next Civil War. I'm telling everybody, get ready for it, because our generation, we just don't give a F-U-C-K about anything else.
Okay.
But what's right, and what's right, I'm just telling you how it is, and what's right is us doing something about it. For real, they are a weaker specimen.
Okay.
They require way too much maintenance and they cannot beat us, man. Never could. But that fear, that shit got to go, man. I apologize for my language, but that has to go. I love you, Tucker, and I wish you the best, man, and Islam.
Islam, though. Okay. Area code 716. Come on in here.
Peace, Brother Tahanka. This is Miera from New York.
Hey, Miera.
Oh, hi. My hat goes off to the brother that was just speaking and the other sister that was just speaking. I wasn't going to say anything, but my heart was just really went out to the mother. The few times that I did, watch the Trayvon Martin situation, I couldn't watch it because I just saw a mother sitting there in pain but trying to hold her composure. And I couldn't believe it when I heard about the verdict. I didn't even watch it or anything. I didn't even know they had reached the verdict. But my point is that if it had been a black man that had killed the black man, you know, that black man would have been found guilty and would be in jail right now.
Okay.
But because it was another race, they found him not guilty. I'm saying that to say this. I felt pain for that mother because myself, I am in the same situation, more or less. Because I'm sitting here now trying to figure out how to get my son out of jail that was found guilty 1999, gave him life, and he didn't even have a gun and didn't shoot anyone.
Okay.
And when I think about the pain of the victim of the situation that my son was in, being an innocent person in a car and didn't know what was going to happen, was supposed to be getting a ride, and the person that was driving went and picked up someone else. And when all of the evidence came on the other two people that was in the car, I won't go into a whole bunch of detail, but it was someone else that committed the crime. I paid money to have lawyers evaluate my son's case. They came back that the prosecutor was, I think what they call it, prosecutorial misconduct, ineffective of counsel. And everything was clear, cut, and dried that my son was innocent. The only thing that they what happened, that the prosecutor got a conviction out of, not, you know, out of my son being placed at the scene, and only because my late husband had took him to the police station to give his statement of what happened and everything without an attorney being present. So that's how they built the case against my son. And, you know, it was, and they gave, my son had not been in town but about 2 weeks. He had got a ride to go shopping.
Well,
and
let me
they
ask
gave
you
my
this.
Son, they gave my son life. They gave my son life.
Well, what do you think, Miera, is the solution to this kind of problem?
I think the solution is just like the brother was saying about all the states should boycott, and people should come together when our, you know, black children are being locked up for all these number of years, children being locked up. It's like they're trying to eliminate them. If it's a black-on-black crime, okay, they don't mind locking you up. But when it comes to another race, now, if it was on the flip side, if it was a black person that had killed the white guy, the Hispanic guy, he would have been locked up. If it was the other way around.
Okay, well let me
so
ask you this now.
We need to come together
apart
to do
from,
something about it.
From the apart from the boycotting, what else do you think need to be done in regards to the people that have done this to your child?
I think with them, I think they should be called out, and to know that the prosecutors perjure themselves, you know, to get convictions, to get elevated into higher offices, because that prosecutor became a judge not too long after my son was prosecuted. And the
okay,
killing
so
thing
you,
about
you're
it was
saying
that,
that we should go further and looking for some further justice on court system in regards to the people who done it.
Yes, yes. I think they need to be evaluated, and, you know, their record should be, you know, checked out too. They need to be put on trial. I think whenever there's a conviction like that, until we get it in our psyche of what is being done to our people or anyone that's being unjustly incarcerated, because it's a mass incarceration of our people. You know, either they're getting killed or they're getting locked up in jail. And nobody knows
what
to do about it.
What do you think that we should do about the ones who are being killed? What do you think that we should do about the people who killed them?
I think that we should pull together and, you know, have something formulated, whereas each state have like a watchdog coalition thing where it could be monitored and someone go in and, you know, just go in and go in behind them and be able to say, well, this, you know, it wasn't right to, you know, to rectify it.
All right, well, let me ask
you, know,
you
like
this.
Watchdog, like a watchdog.
Let me ask you this. Now, we're going to say that
in your son's case, that he didn't go to prison, that he was shot dead by a policeman, what do you think should be done about the policeman that shot your child and killed him?
I would say that we should have a protest. We should have people that knows how to go into, you know, the court system, or, you know, whoever would be, you know, the one that you would go to. I don't know what all these people's names are called, but someone be able to go to and rectify these people's records. I mean, you know, they just get off too much. I mean, you know,
okay.
I can't really put it in words.
Hold on
a
minute. Hold on a minute, because the switchboard is lighting up. Hold on. Area code 404. 404.
Hello? Steve.
Come on, man.
What's going on? Can you hear me?
I hear you. Come on, man.
My fault, my brother. I am Pahana of L Day of Unity, Wachita, Doug Demonte, Moore Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to the insight everybody's giving, which is very, very, you know, necessary to vent. But what is the root of this problem that we have? To the effect of where Plato said, for those who refuse to participate in politics end up being ruled by their inferiors, correct?
What do you think is the solution to the problem?
Is to not remain ignorant of law. It's the essence of the people in charge of this government. It's not the essence of what government, because government has to be enforced. But if it's
let's take a look at the problem. The problem is, what we're discussing here this evening, we have people of African descent, young children, who are being murdered in cold blood. That's a problem. We had it for 400 years inside the United States. Now, the brother call has dropped. If there's anybody else got a question, a comment, go ahead and raise your hand. Open up the line because the brother, it seems that his call has dropped. And we'll open up the line and get you in here so that you can tell us what you think about what's going on, okay?
Greetings. I'd like to invite you out to the Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th, 2013, located in Jacksonville, Florida. 3 days of executing and planning of executive plans for 25-year agenda, operating as an economic unit. The presenters will be Shem L. of the Tamarain 2 Project, Dr. Ali Muhammad and Minister Inki of the Black Genetic Tour, Sundiata Amael, Professor Asif Deanham L, Tahaka Amana L, Abundance Child, Fatima, the Alchemist Shabazz, Messiah L, and more. Topics will be the execution of urban geoponics, creating independent distribution systems, creating independent economic systems, genetics, private security force, the wholesale and manufacturing of natural products, Morristown, creating one in every state, Morris Eastside Farms, putting one in every state. You do not want to miss this summit. It is very enlightening, empowering, and most of all, it's applicable. Everything that we talk about, we do. Summit of the Moors, August 16th through the 18th. Log on to www.summitofthemoors.com. You can register for free. The summit is always free. You can also get your hotel room, which will be on the river at the Wyndham Hotel. That's www.summitofthemoors.com. The summits are always free. See you at the summit.
Erico 404.
Hey, 404. Talk about the disconnection, my brother.
Come on, man.
All right, yes. My intentions were stating in the outset of what I was stating was is the fact that if the government is not based on principles of love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice, we can expect injustice. You know, King said himself, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And throughout this history, you can see different cases that have come up and people have let them just slide up under the rug, so to say. So the essence of what we got to do is just reconstruct government. And you know, I grew up in a neighborhood back in the 80s in Albany, Georgia, called CME, Crime, Murder, and Execution, where I'm not glorifying nothing in the negative, but we basically policed ourselves. Police didn't even come through our neighborhood because we basically took care of our own problems. If someone was messing with a child, we took care of it. You know, whereas we may have had our beefs with each other, but we all stood together united. No one from another neighborhood even came over in the neighborhood, and even if they had relatives. If they did, they had to be out by sundown. The thing is that I say that to say this, I lived in somewhat which we can say is a functioning, sovereign society in effect, where besides, you know, the essence, we didn't have our own grocery stores, our own food and all that, so to say, but that's the essence. We had to have food, clothes, and shelter and work ourselves into the affairs and take control and take what's right for the back in essence of law. Everything has to be done in the form of paperwork. You know, we have to come together.
Okay, well, let me ask you this right here. Now, you say everything had to be done in the form of paperwork. Do you have children?
Yes.
How old is it?
I have four children. They are 23, 21, 9, and 3.
Let's take the first one, 23. If a policeman shot your son down in the streets and killed him for something that he didn't do, what do you suggest be done about it? How much paperwork you think need to be done? What do you think?
By paperwork is the education of the father and the mother prior to this, about putting their nationality on public record, by getting everything done. Now, on the physical, we have to understand we're not physical beings. We have to leave the emotions
out of
it.
My question to you is, what are you prepared to do?
Wow. You know, that right there is a multi-layered question. I mean, it sounds like a loaded question. I'm looking at the future for what's going to happen if we don't go ahead and take action now. By trying to fight someone on a physical realm and trying to just get caught up in all this emotion, we're not physical beings, we're spiritual beings. You know, that's the whole essence. We're in this physical to have a... If we don't unify... period, across the board, and not try to label or add this policing was a problem. All policing ain't negative. It's the essence of what people are doing that are in, there are like police forces that are divided within themselves. Same as the communities.
Right.
They
okay.
are divided.
Right.
They
okay.
have
well,
different
well,
sets
on.
Of people
hold,
that
hold
do
on.
Certain things that
hold,
others
hold
don't
on
do.
A minute. Hold on a minute. Hold on. Hold on a minute. Let me open up this other line right here. Area code 606.
Yes, this is Noble Moshe Ismael. To the gentleman that just was speaking, if we are, and we are, spiritual beings, then why are you so afraid of the physical? Because what's happening on this plane only pertains to the business on this plane. So what Brother Taharker is saying is that for the business on this plane, what are we planning on doing on this plane? Physical plane, because here we are spiritual beings, yeah, but it doesn't give us the right to be afraid to do something in the physical dimension. You see what I'm saying? And that's all. I just wanted to address him because it seemed like he was talking about paperwork, type of work. We didn't ever come up with none of that. None of that is our procedures or anything like that. And that's not gonna work. I don't know if you want to talk about paperwork, brother, then he should talk about going to world court. He should be talking about taking these people, these criminals, in front of the rest of the world and having them judged. Now, does he have the nerve to that? Is that physical? It still takes a physical body for the energy to sign a paper, doesn't it? It still takes physical. This is a physical plane that we're operating on, although we're spiritual creatures. So there's no sense in being afraid. That fear got to go out the window, man.
Okay. All right. I certainly appreciate you chiming back in, brother. Y'all hold on a moment. And we will be right back.
Shut up.
973. Come on in. Hey, Sue. Come on.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Come across loud and clear.
Okay, I just want to say hi to all the fam, and I do want to make a comment about the boycott.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that people want to boycott and do the nation building and things of that nature, and I was just wondering, who has the blueprint to effectively do this? You know, I've been blessed to be able to meet Dr. Claude Anderson, Red Powernomics, met some awesome Moors, some other people in nation building, people who own their own farmland, who's ready to provide real food for people. And I just want to know, with all this talk about boycotting, if you take one thing away, you have to replace it. So where are the black businesses? If we want to boycott buses, where are the black bus lines to replace it? Or the black
mm-hmm.
car services to replace it,
mm-hmm.
this service?
Okay.
You know, so that's something
a fair
that we
question.
Need to think about.
That is a fair question. Hold on a minute. Let me get to the next caller. Now, before I go to the next caller, if there's any of you online that can address this question, go ahead and raise your hand. And for the brother on the, now I forgot, it was 604. I think it was 604. Someone in the chat room want to know how they can get in touch with you. Area code 760. Come on in.
Hey, Tahaka. How you doing today, bro?
Hey, miss. I'm fine,
all
man.
Right. I'll answer the question for the young lady.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple, there aren't any, because we as so-called black people don't own anything besides barbershops and barbecue stands that I know of, at least in my town. You know, I live in a town that brings in multi-millions of dollars every year. People partying, bikers, Jews, Catholic, everybody. Only two places within 8 miles of each other is a barbershop and a barbecue place. Now, we ain't going to get nowhere. Except we're going to have our hair going to look good, and we're going to get fat from eating all that pork. You know, we're not up to speed. Let's just put it plain and simple. Or at least if there's somebody out there with the right essentials for to bring us up to speed, they're not at least putting out the – I'm not saying they're not putting it out there. I'm just saying it's not available to the nation of so-called black people, Moors, whatever you're calling yourself this week, for us to come together and do something about it. I mean, you know, I lived all over the world, traveled 7 different countries before I was 24 years old on my own dime. I've been called the N-word in so many different languages, I done forgot. So I just want to let you know that this is not just a problem here in America. And I'm not saying it's a problem with everywhere, but as a whole, nowhere in the world do we hang together. Even in our so-called homeland, 80 to 90% of that land is owned by somebody who never was supposed to own it in the first place, or it's controlled by somebody who was never supposed to control it in the first place. And, you know, I understand people, you ask that question, what would you do if that was your son and all of these things? I hear some people saying, we got to get our paperwork together. Some people want to go say 10 Hail Marys and 4 Holy Jesuses and, you know, and try to collect a couple dollars to try to build something. It's not going to work because we don't have nothing together. You know, even I'm a Moor and I look around. I don't see us. We don't have nothing together. We can't even stand up and go, hey, man, let's go down to Stanford. Let's go talk to these police officers and wonder why that boy was sitting up in the morgue for over 2 weeks or so and his daddy just lived right down the street from where he was shot, and they was looking for him, and nobody said nothing. Nobody even said anything about that, you know. The boy was already autopsied and cut up, body parts sent out all over the world before his parents even found him in such a small town. You know, these are the questions. So I look at ourselves as people. We call ourselves king, queen, nobles, and, you know, all of this stuff. But we can't move a rock if we had to. Honestly, look at it. And it hurts me because I want to build a nation. And I see a lot of people out there struggling, trying to do the same thing. But we're missing something that none of us really had a key. And I hear the brother talk about fear and all this stuff. You know what? Ain't nobody afraid out here. But the thing is, don't nobody can do nothing from jail or the grave that we know of. You know? So we're really trying to keep ourselves safe, for one thing, because we do got children and everything. But I'll let you go ahead. I'll listen. But I that's how I feel at this present time and moment. I'm really disappointed in ourselves. We haven't been able to step ourselves up enough to even deal with a situation like this. You know?
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, hold on, bro. Don't go nowhere.
Yeah.
There you go. 313. Straight into that.
Yeah. I'm calling in because I was listening to the young lady who was asking, in the event of boycotting, what do we do to compensate for the businesses or the civil services or whatnot that we will no longer be contributing to? I live in Detroit, and this is what I have to say about boycotting here in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I go out and I'm driving. Everywhere I look, I see party buses owned by black people. So if we boycott it, you mean to tell me with all these black-owned businesses with these party buses that's generating all these hundreds and thousands of dollars, not just party buses, charter buses as well, that they rent out to people when they're traveling out of town to their family reunions or if they're going upstate to rally for something. If there's always a will, there's a way. If we organize and we put platforms together and we let people know that we are boycotting and we need your support, I can absolutely guarantee you that people will donate their services. That's an absolute. We've got to get rid of this "we don't have power" mentality, because we do have power. We just don't know how to exercise our power. We know how to fight. We just don't know when to fight and how to fight when it's time to fight. So I just want to let that young lady know, I'm here to encourage you. Don't think just because you boycott and you decided you don't want to use public transportation any longer that there's no means for you to get to where you have to go. Because there's always a way. So I just want to give you that, sister, to give you something to feed on. I'm quite sure there's businesses around there in your area that has party buses. Even white folks might want to contribute to our cause. I'm not saying don't deal with them. Because if they want to contribute, if you got a white man that owns a bus company, and he has 10 charter buses, and we decide to boycott the city, and he's all for what we're trying to do, he says, "Hey, guess what? I'm down for your cause. I've got these charter buses that I'm willing to let you guys use to get back and forth to work or wherever you're trying to go." Are you going to deny him that, or are you going to use his party bus? So that's something for us to think about. I'm tired of excuses when it comes to boycotting. Every time you mention anything about boycotting, Negroes get scared. And they can think of a million reasons why we shouldn't boycott. You had Martin Luther King back in their days. They was walking miles miles to get to where they had to go. They want to complain and shit about how we going to get there. Y'all people need to quit it. Y'all need to quit it. I'm done.
Wait a minute before you go out. Let me ask you something. You got children now, right?
Yes, I have children. I have two African-American males that I'm raising as a single mother.
How old is it?
I got a 20-year-old and a 17-year-old.
All right. That's all you got?
I got three girls. I have a 23-year-old daughter, a 15-year-old daughter, and an 11-year-old daughter.
And if how old
you kill
the youngest
one of my
boy?
Kids, if you kill one of my kids, you might as well kill me, too.
All right, well, who did that? Hold on, I'm gonna cut you off. Just hold on. Okay, Mose, if you got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand so I can open up the line and get you on in so you can tell us what you think about it. But in the meantime, we finna go because we don't have to come back to part two on this right here. I see that right now. That ton of information.
This is propaganda. They must learn to be productive so that they can produce for their own desires. They must learn to assume the ownership of the means of production and learn self-control. If the society moves our children into black-on-black violence because it engages them in frustration and the dealing with their frustrations in incorrect ways, then we must train our children to be task-oriented, to solve the causes of problems, and not engage in dealing with the symptoms of problems. We must teach them to discern the sources of their frustration and remove those sources and tear them out from the root. We must teach them how to use their anger and aggressive feelings positively. Every emotion that is in the human mind is there for a positive reason, and they must be used for positive reasons. Anger is a positive emotion if it is used correctly. So is aggression. God did not put anger and aggression in you just for negative purposes alone. But we must be taught how to use those things. We must teach them to be resourceful and how to get around those frustrations, to develop social intelligence, skills, and competence. We must teach them coping strategies for stress. If they displace their anger and use their anger to attack themselves and destroy themselves and to destroy others like themselves, we must get them to know their real enemy. We must get them to recognize that this enemy, this white man, is only a man, that he bleeds and dies like any other man. We must read to him the history of our African fathers as they cut down and mowed down the white man, and how they were only betrayed by their own cupidity. We must have them understand that. Let them read the story of the Egyptians as they cut, the Ethiopians as they cut down the Italian armies, and read the stories of the other Africans as they cut down the white armies. Bush thinks he's gotten away with this little game, but it's not over. It's not over. By the very fact that he engaged in this war, we now know what his game plan is. We now know his weaknesses and his strengths. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, his strength is his weakness. Understand? And we're going to teach our children how to tear up the soft underbelly of this dragon and this monster called white America. I was down at Tuskegee last weekend, and I saw the Chappie James Aerospace Center. Interesting. But one thing we've learned about this war here is that once we get an Air Force, we're ready. And so we're going to set them up. The only thing that got this man across was he was not resisted in the air. And we will meet him in the air and on the ground. Recognize that the white man can be defeated, that he's not invincible. We must teach them that the displacement of anger at self or at others like at ourselves makes matters worse and is self-destructive. If they are having problems with their self-concept, then we must give them great support. We must affirm them and affirm their identity. We must teach them confirmations so that they know how to make positive statements to themselves and affirm themselves. We must teach them how to stop negative thoughts and change the nature of the situation that they are in. If they are engaged in violence and black upon black violence, we must teach them how to resolve conflicts between themselves without destroying themselves. It means then that we have to develop relevant educational programs. We have to develop a parallel school system. We have to make this government, by hook or crook, fund the health care systems of the local and state localities of our people. We must emphasize prevention in the black community, change the lifestyles of our people who are literally eating themselves to death, or whose lifestyles are literally destroying their health. My next book is going to be on black health, by the way, and I'm going to show how the death wishes, how we carry out the death wishes of whites through our eating and health habits. Because they wish that we will die, we accommodate them by drinking too much Pepsi and all the other things. We're going to emphasize critical problems. We must develop programs to ensure adequate prenatal counseling and care. We must develop systems to neutralize the crimogenic system. We must set it our goal, not the assimilation to the society, but the elimination of this society as it is. We must set it our goal, economic development, the development of the economic status of our people across this world. We must engage in the development of a nation within a nation. How can the people keep saying that they are kept out of this society and are separated and segregated from this society and not use that to their advantage and create a nation within a nation and get ready to fight the other evil nation in the society? We must engage our people in consumer education, withdraw from those entities and those industrial systems and so forth that are a part and partial of the destruction of the black community and the communities of Africans. We have to stop buying those Nike sneakers and Reebok sneakers that sell 70% of their wares to black people while they refuse to even franchise black stores to sell those sneakers. We must stop buying Ford Motor Company cars when they take out those car factories from Detroit and import them into Polish and other neighborhoods. And after we get through with Ford, we stop buying GM. And after we get through with GM, we stop buying Toyota and the rest. We will not subsidize the destruction of our people. We must develop an African-centered, full African-centered educational program. We must educate our males. It is very important that we pull these males aside and train them for manhood, train them for husbandhood and fatherhood, and train them for the military so that they undertake the overthrow of the system. We must engage our young people in political education so that they will learn how to engage in the political overthrow of their enemies and organize themselves politically. We must train those of us who want to go into this church into a new theology, that it is not enough to paint the face of Jesus or to paint the face of angels and still believe in the same Eurocentric ideology and theology. We must go into these prisons and take our men from these prisons. These are the men who must be used to defend our community. They must be rehabilitated on the lines of an African-centered philosophy and on political lines and military lines so that they can use their aggression now, not against themselves or against the nation of African people, but against the true enemies of African people, the white man. We must develop regional conferences in our nation within a nation and a national congress so that we can coordinate and facilitate the talents of our people who are engaged in various aspects of the political, social, and economic reorganization of this country. We must build schools for leadership. We must build schools that engage in policy development and analysis, and schools for developing strategy, schools for developing a military machine to protect us against the interests of Europeans. Recognize that there's one thing that's clear, that the imperialistic system has only one constant, and that is self-interest. And when it is in its self-interest to destroy and wipe black people from the face of this earth, it will engage in that activity. You have the history of the Indians in America to show that, that when a people are economically not useful to the Europeans proceed to annihilate those people. Therefore, ladies and gentlemen, we must prepare for revolution and prepare for war. Thank you very much.
Okay, Moses, we're back. I'm going to open up all of the remaining lines that's open right now. And if you got questions, comments, now the time to jump on board. I'm opening up area code 904. I'm opening up area code 716. I'm opening up 757. I'm opening up 760. And I'm opening up 404.
Right.
Starting
here.
With
seven.
You. 5-7-6-904. Hold on. Hold the background noise. Area code 904.
Yes,
what is
I'm
your
here.
Final statement in regards to the solution to the problem of the killing of young black males in America?
The only solution that I think that ever be understood is we got to have the solution of they got to know that we're serious when we say we're not going to take it anymore. And I like the brother that came on with somebody, the younger generation, and I know this is to be fact because I have two boys in that younger generation, and they are not of the same mindset that they just going to lay back and take anything and everything, and you're going to have to arm yourself and be ready.
Okay. 716, come on. Are you there?
I'm sorry, I had my line muted. I'm sorry. My solution would be that we need to monitor the way that the court system is used, because not everyone is conscious to know the difference in the different jurisdictions and the statutes and how the laws are. So I think, you know, there should be an entity in each state, cities, to be able to conform together whenever these situations comes up as a support system for the brothers and sisters.
Okay. Area code 757. What's your solution
yes,
to the killing?
Islam. Yes, Islam. I believe, you know, what the sister was talking about, but it's been many states been having support groups with people taking videotapes, what the police doing, taking pictures. Ain't none of that happening. It's time to be a warrior and show that you're a warrior person. It's time to make our own ammunition. A lot of us have recipes on how to make that. And there's something that's called cupcakes, and they are very beautiful, but they are very deadly.
Okay. All right. 760. Come on.
My solution, basically, just we just got to stop being scared to die. Period. I saw a brothers over in Egypt today. They said the reason that they are going to be successful is because they have a group of people who are not afraid to give their life for freedom. Now, I may not be here. Like I said, I may not be here to see it happen. But you touch another one of my kids, there's going to be some problems. That's all I got to say. It's going to be some problems.
All right. Okay. 404, come on.
As a Morris American, I have to defer to the mindset of the masses, because, you know, the question I got to really ask was, does the lower self breed? It breeds hatred, slander, lewdness, murder, theft, and everything that it harms. And in response to earlier, the answer I was trying to really state is putting them to international and world court, bringing them accountable in that fashion, because it's no help to try and go ahead and fight them on that lower self battle, because we got to think with as the higher self breathes as the mother of virtues and harmonies of life and breathes justice, mercy, love, and right. We have to learn to really know who we are as spiritual beings and understand that this is there's no fear in being unified in one common cause. It's not about black on white. All that's a mirage. The thing is of course, we know that these what we're labeling as white people are not actually white. You know, the same as what we're labeling as black is not black, because when you write things down and put it into law, that brings things into fruition. We have the capacity and the knowledge amongst many different branches of the Morris Science Temples and all affiliates thereof. We have to understand that we have to come together. We allow different opinions of different things to divide people, and the individualism is not going to be, you know, really the thing that's going to come together as black on white or white on black. It's about understanding the principles of what we stand for as Morris Americans. And that is under love,
okay,
truth, peace, freedom, and justice.
Okay. All right. Thank you, bro. Brand new caller. Where you on where to? Come on, man.
Hello?
I'm here. Come on in. Tell me about it.
Islam. It's Moshe Ismael, the brother that just spoke. I agree somewhat. But the lower half on this physical dimension, we've been fighting my brother. I don't know how old you are, but we've been fighting my brother for a long time, since the beginning, just like the light is fighting the darkness, and it don't stop. It doesn't stop fighting. Just because there's a fight don't mean stop. And just because we're Moorish Americans, just because we're nationals doesn't mean stop fighting. Since the Punic Wars, on up to the Battle of Poitiers, on up to all the way to the Trail of Tears, we've been fighting. This is not nothing new. We just stopped because of fear. You see what I'm saying? I agree with a lot of people with some of the things they were saying about moving forward. The only way to move forward, like the Grand Sheik said, is revolution. The words they stole from us, New World Order, it's time for it. That old remnant of understanding has to be deferred. It has to be set aside, because in this generation, my generation, we need the support of the older generation. We are going to bring about the action that is going to reflect change, and we are very much in need of the older brothers in the temples and the sheikhs to, like the Grand Sheik spoke, to support us and to derail some of the anger that some of my generation does have. And the point, though, is to take that anger and to direct it towards, like he was saying, towards change, towards action. But there will be always people talking. There will always be so much talking going on, but there's never any action. And when you look in the news, you see my generation doing all kind of stuff that's wrong. Well, just like the grassroots, they'll turn it around. That's what we're doing. We're out here recruiting people who are on their last leg, people who are in the prison system, people who are thinking about joining the military, people that are of our generation, of our nationality, that are willing to do that. The other brother spoke about submitting paperwork into the court system, but this is the same system that has us oppressed. This is the same system that guaranteed us that we would never be citizens, yet we want to be citizens. This is why. We want to be citizens. We want to have a driver's license. We want to have an ID.
because of fear that you can't survive without the white man, that you can't walk down the street and find a way to survive on your own without a white. You people paying for electric, build a windmill. Build a windmill, get your own electric, get your own water. What's the laziness? The men, I've not heard too many men speaking on this line. The men, when will we stop being so coward, stop trying to find a sit-down solution and a pencil and paper solution? Yeah, it was a pencil battle for a little while, but now it's not. It's not a psychological battle, and we are spiritual beings, and we're not using your lower self would be to do evil. But as he spoke, we stand for love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. And justice involves a balance. And when we, the night watchers and day watchers, are on the watch and that balance is offset, then you, my brother, who was speaking, you and I and any other man are responsible and held accountable because we are the watchmen. And when that balance is not set, when we refuse to do what is necessary, to do what's necessary to make that balance correct, then we ourselves are given into our lower half because that is what it is. Afraid to die? Wow, we'll just come right back. There is no ending to anything. And if he's into the sciences the way he's going to say black and white, then therefore there is no black and white. There is no nationality. It's just all spirit. And so if there is all spirit, then we're wearing different colors. One's wearing green shirts and the other's wearing red. They're green. Therefore, green versus red. Who's going to win? Islam.
Okay. Islamo. All right. We're going to deal with a little short situation here. And when I get back, because we got 28 minutes, so we got enough time now, we're going to deal with a little quick situation, and then when I come back, I'm hoping it's going to clearly describe itself, but if it doesn't, then I'm going to fill in the blanks. So y'all hold on.
I must emphasize at the outstart that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is not a politician.
That's right.
So I'm not here this afternoon as a Republican, nor as a Democrat, not as a Mason, nor as an elf, not as a Protestant, nor a Catholic, not as a Christian, nor a Jew, not as a Baptist, nor a Methodist. In fact, not even as an American. Because if I was an American, the problem that confronts our people today wouldn't even exist.
Now we ain't Americans, huh?
So I have to stand here today as what I was when I was born, a black man. Before there was any such thing as a Republican or a Democrat, we were black. Before there was any such thing as a Mason or an elk, we were black. Before there was any such thing as a Jew or a Christian, we were black people. In fact, before there was any such place as America, we were black. And after America has long passed from the scene, there will still be black people. I'm going to tell you like it really is. Every election year, these politicians are sent up here to pacify. They're sent here and set up here by the white man. This is what they do. They send drugs in Harlem down here to pacify us. They send alcohol down here to pacify us. They send prostitution down here to pacify us. Why, you can't even get drugs in Harlem without the white man's permission. You can't get prostitution in Harlem without the white man's permission. You can't get gambling in Harlem without the white man's permission. Every time you break the seal on that liquor bottle, that's a government seal you're breaking. Oh, I say it, again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok. This is what he does.
Okay, we're back. Now, my question is, at this particular point in time, because we got a lot of our mixed reactions about a lot of stuff. But we have, this is what we have, this is what I see. I could be wrong now, and I need y'all to correct me if I'm wrong. But this is what I see. Because I have done extensive research on a specific set of circumstances that has occurred on the North American continent. I have seen people of African descent murdered in cold blood and nothing done to stop it, period. Now, we're dealing with the gin, we're out of water. We're dealing with gin without the grapefruit juice. We're just dealing with raw, naked gin. This is what I've seen. Therefore, my question is, what is the solution to stop the killing of people of African descent inside the United States? That is the only question that I have, and I'm looking for the solution to that question. What do you do? How do you stop this thing? How do you stop it? What is the solution to this particular problem? I think that is a fair question. I think it's a fair question. I really do. And when I come back, I need y'all to raise your hands so we can start getting down to the nitty-gritty of this thing and try to figure out how to do it.
Too late. Ooh, ooh. You don't. Turn it loose
let it fall to earth. That's how bad it was. The police didn't come for 4 hours later because they found out who was involved, who crossed who, and what it was all about. So they went to lunch because they said, we're not going to deal with these particular demons. So I ask you, when somebody kills your child, what are you prepared to do with it? Who are you in America? Air code 973. 973.
Peace, Brother Peace. This is Sister Shy again. I am not a parent, but I grew up watching A Time to Kill with Samuel Jackson. If somebody was to kill my child, it's a time to kill. Point blank, period. The solution, like I said, I already called and asked about the boycott and actually replacing it. I thank you for the sister who provided information about what's going on up in Detroit. I've gotten to see some nationals, been up to Philly, seen some nationals arm up, put in their own self-defense. They had their own militia. Long are the days of Malcolm X and Angela Davis and Huey P. Newtons and Elaine Brown, but we are here.
Okay.
So the matter is truly getting that unity within all the different cities around the nation and people actually coming together and assembling together like they used to back in the day. It used to happen in the churches. I don't know what's going on in the churches nowadays.
Okay.
But the thing is, we do need those leaders in those communities, and we do definitely need integrity and unity, and we do need our men as well as our women to gird up their loins and stand on their square, because it's not happening. So
okay.
It's a lot of aspects, whether physical and metaphysical, a lot of aspects to the situation. But the thing is, we have to take action first. And we do need to open up books and read and be strategic about things. And if it comes down to it, people need to put their money where their mouth is, because it's going to come a point in time where we're going to need some capital to be able to do the things that we need to do to create businesses of our own gross domestic products, our own self-defense, militias, and things of that nature. So people need to be willing to do that, even if they're donating $5 towards a cause. $5 to at least contribute a love donation to your teacher who's teaching the whole community law, wherever it is. So those are some things, but I did want to read something. I have a brother up in Canada who's
well,
not
we don't have time. But I certainly appreciate you dropping the science that you did do. That's very, very important. You're dead on point with that.
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay, let me go to the next one. Area code 817. 817.
It's loaded.
817 is not here.
Brother
hey,
Tom.
Hey, come on, man.
Hey, yeah. We gotta get some collective economics more. The prophets say a lot of our problems are economic, man. You know, we gotta stop shopping with people who blatantly show us, you know, that and they going for their people. So why do we keep spending our money? And we can't sit here and say that we ain't got no money, because I've been seeing studies here lately talking about blacks collectively have $1 trillion in spending power, but yet and still, you know, we get mad over a verdict, be mad for about a week, and then go right back to our old bad habits of shopping with the people who have no intention to ever do anything for us. And I don't blame them, because it's up to us to do for us, you know, and that's just how I see it. So, you know, part of it is
just collective economics. If we could just do that, that alone would take so much wind out of their sails that they'd come back begging to us, because even in our dead state, we support the whole globe. You look at hip-hop around the world, people are eating off something that Asiatics created when they were dead asleep, you know, and people feeding off of that. And then you just look at our spending habits. They dead asleep out here buying Jordans, $150, $200 a pop, hair weaves and nails, all this. I'm talking about fueling whole industries, but don't realize the value of their spending power, you know.
I agree with you 100%. And I certainly appreciate you bringing that to the table. And so I have to assume that you are in agreement with the boycott situation too.
Oh, definitely. You know, I put that, I actually said that last night on Facebook. You know, I say, you want to get these people attention, don't spend no money with them. That's how you get their attention. You know, because even in the tragedy of the young brother's death, even in that, they still got paid. Them lawyers got paid. The state mm-hmm. got paid. Because you know, like I know, Brother Tahawk, when you talk about any type of commercial proceeding, such as a court case, all they talk about is commerce, and there's a bond. When you look up the word bond means somebody owes some money, you know? So when you understand that there's a bond attached to that, those charges that was there, they got paid. And that's all it's ever been about for them, because those courts that they held that, whatever you want to call it, is had nothing to do with law or justice. It was about commerce and trade, and you know that, and I know that, but the rest of us don't know that.
Okay. So now you're telling me that if a policeman shoot my son down in the street, and they decide that we got to do a trial, do an investigation of it, they don't care nothing about it, it's just by commerce, right?
They don't care about that. That investigation was a dog and pony show. What was going on in behind the scenes was debits and credits was being moved from one account to another account.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in regards to your question about if a policeman shoot your child or anything like that, you know, if you are who you say you are, I don't even have to tell you what you need to do in that matter, because he didn't ask permission to shoot your child, or, you know, he didn't come to you and speak on that matter. He took it upon himself. So you as a man, in my opinion, you got to take it upon yourself and stand up. Yeah, I'm going to take care of my man.
Brother, I certainly appreciate you calling in, man. We got 6 minutes. And I'm finna open up another line and see if we get some brief comments. Now, y'all got to be brief, real brief right now, because we're winding down. Erico, 606, come on.
Yes, Brother Noble Moshe Ismael.
Speak up, can't hear you, man. Speak up.
Yes, I would say that enlightenment of what the brother just said, he's right. You know, the process as far as the court system, it's a system that's designed to make us fail, but at the same time, it is commerce. You know, the officer takes the uniform citation to the clerk. The clerk then makes a deal with the prosecutor. The prosecutor then secures a loan off of the bond for the assessment for the crime. Then from that on, it's just all commerce. Like he said, it's just an act. What we're talking about, though, is what will we do, though, in the physical sense, if someone was to murder our children. If someone murders my child, I'm not even going to say, if someone murders your child, I myself would get involved completely. I would get involved completely, because we're united, we stand. You know, so we're not united. Our people are not united. We're finding all kind of reasons to not be united. But just to wrap it up, Brother Tarka, yes, if a man would allow his child to be killed and he do nothing, then he is a coward and a traitor to his own nation, to his own people. These people are traitors. These people don't want to come out of their houses, out of their fine cars and all this stuff that's been it's just dirt and pieces of rocks and shit that's shaped up to look real good. I mean, it's nothing. It's just matter. And so these people are willing to be traitors against our nation rather than fight with our nation for this revolution that is destined to come. It has to come. It's written in the stars. So the people that don't want to fight, just go ahead and kill yourself. But the people who do want to fight, you will, and you'll say, you have a reason to live. You see what I'm saying? To continue the fight.
All right, well let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question.
Brother. Yes, sir.
Now, you say if someone going to injure my child,
yes,
you will help me, but I need you to do a,
yes,
make me a promise.
Promise. I
need
would.
You.
I would for the, because if they
this
kill
is promise
yourself,
I need you to make me. Promise that you don't get in my way and don't stick your head up when I'm busy. Did you promise me that? I'm finna go, man. I'm gonna go. We wind it down. I appreciate you calling in, brother.
Yes,
thank you so much. Okay, it's long. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I see y'all chiming in now, but I don't have time. We got for 3 minutes now, but we are going to come back Tuesday night with part two of this thing. Okay, Tuesday night with part two. So y'all make sure that y'all be here with us. For part two of the solution, because we're finna start just dealing with the solution. We, you know, I got some more stuff to run, but the bottom line is the solution to the killing. Okay, and sooner or later, before it's over, we'll get it in our minds about the solution. And I thank you all. Area code 323-904-760. Make sure y'all bring them same numbers back Tuesday night so we can let you in and you can tell us, but right now I just can't open up the lines. I wish I could, and I wish I didn't have to cut things off so quick, but I have to move on so that we can get everybody heard about this thing, because this is serious, and we ain't playing. I ain't playing, and I know y'all ain't playing, because one sister told me she wanted to cut off some heads and put on a stick, so I know this is some serious business here. But anyway, I've been your host, Uncle Monty L. Bay, and y'all have a good night.
I'll see you tonight, girl. Gonna be just you and me. Just making sweet love as we lay between the sheets. Here we are, ready for the do. You're all over me, and I'm all over you. We're gonna rumble, rumble,
rumble.
Between now and then, gonna make it that much better.
five and six girls. We're gonna put it in a love mix. 7 and 8, I'm about to explode, honey. I just can't wait. 9 and 10, bag it up. We're gonna do it again. Well, so here we are, ready for the do. You're all over me, and I'm all over you. We gonna rumble, 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 rumble in the bedroom, baby. We gonna rumble like thunder, yeah. Rumble in the bedroom, baby, yeah. Rumble in the bedroom. Rumble in the bedroom.